afternoon, everybody. Thank you so much for joining us today. This is Hashtag No Limits, and I am your host, Shelley Kino. I am hoping my connection stays strong. We just had a minute ago where my connection was lost, so hopefully we don't have that problem during our episode today. As I said, I am Shelley Kino, and this is Hashtag No Limits. And Hashtag No Limits is about people who society places limits upon, but who have busted through those limits. And Ophelia says in the play Hamlet, we know who we are, but not who we will be. And I believe that there is no more better or beautiful example than the caterpillar turning into the butterfly. For those who don't know, the caterpillar literally dissolves into its cells and then reforms itself into the butterfly. That's got to be terribly difficult, but it isn't finished struggling yet. It then has to struggle for its wings to be strong enough to fly once it gets out of the cocoon. And just as difficult as that is busting through the limits that society places on people. And I'm really happy today to bring Megan to you. I've actually got it backwards. I've got her website up instead of her name today, which normally I flip it the other way to start with. So she is going to talk to us about an organization that helps families who are navigating through special education. Now, does that sound like something you may have heard me say? Because that's exactly what I do. We'll get into that. We'll get into why I think it's so important to have Megan and her organization and what they're doing on today. But just really quickly, make sure that you like and subscribe. And if you will let us know that you're watching hashtag live and then where you're watching from, or if you watch this in a replay, to give me a hashtag live in the chat. And if you have any questions or comments, if you are watching us live or replay, just put them in there and I will make sure to get them answered, or make sure that Megan gets them if this is in the replay and get them answered for you that way. So enough of me. Megan, thank you so much for joining me today. How are you doing?
Good. Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
Yeah, absolutely. So tell us, a little bit of your own backstory, but then what brought you here today?
Sure. So I'm Megan Mudy. I am the director over at Family Matters Parent Training and Information Center. And I came to this work, honestly, the same way so many other folks come to this work, working in disability advocacy, because I have a daughter, Annie, who's 24. Annie has autism and intellectual disabilities. And we just sort of system navigation early on. We realized that the system was far more difficult to navigate than I would have anticipated as a parent. I didn't have any experience really in the school system. That wasn't my specialty area at all. I was working in healthcare. And I just thought I'm going to have to use every connection and resource I have to learn how to navigate this. So as time went on, I dug deeper into disability advocacy, got interested in issues that went well beyond anything that our family has experienced, really dug into what was out there in the state of Illinois, some of the barriers that we see within the state, system navigation around schools and transition specifically. And I worked for the ARC of Illinois, the Liggett Family Advocate Program, for quite a while, which was really a great deal for me, because it allowed me to really learn the system and see all of the barriers and all of the opportunities that families were able to negotiate as they worked through the system, and really how unique it was family to family, because Illinois has got a lot of challenges. You know that Illinois has got a lot of challenges, right, in terms of DD supports. And there's some really good work being done on that. I think there's a lot of advocacy. A good amount of that is being done by families, but there's a lot of professionals fully invested in making the changes that have to be made. But there's a lot of work to do. So I worked for the ARC for 5 or 6 years in the Liggett program, learned the waiver system quite well, and then transitioned over to dig deeper into school-based advocacy through Family Matters. I had been a trainer for them for years, and the opportunity opened up to get more involved, and I've always loved their work. So I feel pretty lucky that I'm in this role and we get to do the things that we do around school-based supports.
Yeah, that is fantastic. So for anybody who isn't aware of ARC, would you mind just giving a quick telling of what that is?
So the ARC of Illinois is really the largest advocacy-based organization for folks and families around developmental disabilities, intellectual disabilities in the state of Illinois. I strongly encourage you to get involved, to join their work, because they really are fully committed to improving the system in Illinois. And they have a lot of resources, a lot of education available on their site. So I encourage you to check it out, the Arc of Illinois.
Awesome. Thank you so much for that. Yeah, that's probably another organization that I should try to have on sometime. And so to kind of go back to my introduction and how, you know, I said you're helping families navigate through special education, which is exactly what I do. And so, you know, in a way, it would look like you're my competition or vice versa. And that is not at all how I feel about your organization. And the reason I feel that is because there are, first of all, so many services that you all can offer that I can't, just because I am pretty much one person where you have an organization of people. Secondly, you can offer the services at low or no cost to the people who come to you. And I can't do that. I'm making a living off of this. And if my true goal is to help everybody navigate through special education in the best, you know, way possible, it makes sense to me to bring you on and have you tell about what you can offer and why you offer it. You, if I am not mistaken, are federally mandated to, right?
Yep.
So do you want to talk about that really quick?
Yeah, so that's it. It's an interesting system. There's two. Every state has a parent training and information center. They're federally funded. Illinois happens to have two. We have one in Chicago, the Family Resource Center on Disabilities. That serves eight counties up in Chicago. And then Family Matters, PTIC, which is housed in Effingham. We cover 94 counties around the state. But PTICs, generally, their focus is working with families and students who have disabilities age 0 to 26. So we actually cover a pretty significant range. I feel like a good chunk of our work is, you know, seems to really take place between middle school to transition. But we do a lot of education around early intervention and transition from early intervention to the school system. But we cover that 0 to 26, and we are funded by OSIP. So it, again, federal funding, lots and lots of requirements around that. But with that, we provide a lot of education to families.
Yeah. And that's so important. And I find that, and I'm just a unique teacher in that I didn't know about your organization when I was teaching full time. I'm sure, you know, through my classes, I've learned that every state has to have one of these centers, but I didn't know where to look or had forgotten, like I said, that it was even a possibility. And so I know I'm like being redundant right now, but I think it's really important to hit that point that every single state, all 50 states across the union, have to have at least one. Now, do you happen to know if Illinois is alone in having two, or do other states have more than one?
There are a few other states that have more than one. I cannot tell you off the top of my head which ones they are, but I believe they tend to be where we have very large cities, condensed population that we couldn't possibly cover, you know, the entire state. And really meet the needs of all the individuals living in those more populated areas. So that we're not the only one, but it's not something that we see across the board.
Right. And so if someone is watching, and let's just say this is the only, you know, 15, 20 seconds of this episode that they get, how does one find you? I mean, for me, it's like, oh, just type in Shelley Kino, but all parents, training and information centers aren't called Family Matter.
Right. They're all called something different. And so, like I said, the one in Chicago area is FRCD, Family Resource Center on Disabilities. We're Family Matters Parent Training and Information Center. So you can do a couple of things. For us, it's pretty easy just to type in our website. It's www.fmptic.org. But you can also search your state for parent training and information centers. So if you happen to be listening to this and next week you move to California, you can find your PTIC there just by looking PTICs in California, and it'll pull up what you have. We might be having a delay, Shelley. I'm not sure if you can hear me. While we're waiting for Shelley's signal to come back, because I think it'll pop back on, at least it has before. I'm happy to talk a little bit about some of the programming we have at Family Matters, because there may be some of you on the call or who listen to this later who might be interested in that. Oh, there you are, Shelley. You came back.
Here I am. I'm so sorry.
You're fine.
Yeah, it seems like it's doing it to me again. I'm trying to put up, as I had at the beginning, I had your website up, but now the format is telling me it's not allowing me to do that. So, but yeah, it was FM PTIC, and thank you for continuing on, even though I wasn't here for a few seconds.
I just put the website in the link. Are in the chat. So in case anybody wants to link through that way, you can check out our website. One of the things that I do really like about our website is it has a great number of resources. And if you get into our resource tab and you think, oh, there's too much, I don't even know where to start, you want to go to the core special education resources. That's a great place to start, because it'll give you some really good guidance around advocacy, mental health, behavioral health, things like that, that will help you sort of navigate right at the start. Like, okay, this is where I want to learn a little bit more about this. And then as you dig in more, maybe you have an interest in early intervention, you can go to that tab and see more, but it's broken down into topics, but it is overwhelming. So I would start with just the core special education resources, see if that meets your needs, and then go from there. But if you have trouble navigating the website at all or can't find what you're looking for, you can certainly reach out to us and we'll try to help you.
Awesome. Thank you. I don't know what is happening with, I don't really think it's StreamYard. I really do think it's me. I moved my office a few weeks ago to a different spot in my house, and I've had some difficulty since I've done that. And so I got to figure out a different setup or something. But hopefully I don't now ask you questions that you covered while I was.
No, all I did was talk about this. No, you're fine. We're going to start on the website and a good place to go if you're kind of overwhelmed by the website. So that's all we talked about.
Okay. All right. Perfect. So one of the things that you mentioned before was 0 to age 26. Why are they all the way up to 26? Because I thought the federal law only went up to 21.
So yes, and most of you know, in Illinois that individuals are aging out. If they choose to participate in transition programming beyond 18, they're, you know, aging out at 22. But they allow us to provide supports all the way through 26, which is fantastic because it allows us to really dig in on those post school years in transition, which, you know, as you certainly know, Shelley, and probably anybody who's experienced transition supports on the call, you may get intensive supports at school. I hope you get intensive supports. You know, it kind of depends on what you need and where you are. But those few years after, when you're seeking waiver services, you're trying to figure out how do you get vocational support. And the school team, which has really been probably your rock and helped guide you through, is now gone. I'm thrilled that we have that leeway within our grant funding that we can really work with those individuals through that. So I'm thrilled that it's 26. I really can't explain to you, Shelley, why they made that decision, other than I guess recognize the gap too. But that's, yeah. We love that. Yeah.
Yeah. That's incredible, because there are so few services. Like, I feel like when the kids are in school, especially at the younger years, we do a fabulous job of educating the students and helping them and being supportive. And then it does, as they get a little older, it seems like some of the supports are pulled away, even though maybe the student still needs them, but the support service personnel are like, well, they're getting older, you know, we want them to be more independent, blah, 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 whatever. But yeah, once they're finished, whatever age, be it 18, be it 21, be it 22 here in Illinois, then what happens? Right. And I don't think there are a lot of services. I mean, I really think this is an area that it's like a cliff. You hit that and boom, you're gone.
Yes. And the struggle we see most often is we do see families who are able to access, for example, home and community-based waiver services or home services through Division of Rehab Services if their individual has a particular level of support that meets that bar. But families don't know about waiver services. They may not have prepped appropriately, so they might not be on the PUNS list. They may not know how to contact their local DRS office. They're probably not been made familiar with their Centers for Independent Living. So there is some really good supports, but families don't know about them. There's a disconnect right. between school services and we really hope we can stand in the gap there and make sure families have it. But that, you know, it's hard because families feel like I'm kind of being abandoned. Like you've stood by me as right. a teen and I've had the support and I'm sure it hasn't gone perfectly and it's been very bumpy and it is a bumpy ride. But it's a group of people that are invested in the student and then it just kind of falls away and it feels like, well, what now? You know, how do I get to where I want to go? You know, even the basics of healthcare transition and transportation and social, you know, connections, belonging
right.
is lacking significantly.
Yes. And I hear that from so many families, exactly what you just said. Like, yeah, I mean, it wasn't perfect, but at least we had people. Now right. we don't have people.
Yeah.
It is. I mean, I've heard this so often from parents that they feel like they're on an island when they're raising a child who is neurodiverse. And at least, you know, when they're in school, they don't feel quite so alone, although they still feel alone. But yeah, then they hit that aging out age and that all comes surging back. And I don't know how to fix it, but I am certainly glad to hear that your organization and all the parent training information centers around the country are supposed to cover until age 26. You made a comment that I want you to touch on a little bit more. You said a lot of families haven't prepared in the sense of like being on, and here in Illinois, we call it PUNS. Mm-hmm. But I don't think that's what it's called in every state. So could you talk what that is? How do families prepare or put some steps in place, I guess, in order to be able to be eligible for some of those waivers?
So a couple things that before I start talking, I would tell families, one thing I would check out is what's called the LIGAS, LIGAS. I can put it in the chat. The LIGAS Family Advocate Program. This having my attention in two different places is challenging because they offer a lot of support around this, but there's a few things families can do really early. So, you know, starting at age 2.5, they could get their individual who has a developmental or intellectual disability on the PUNS list. Keep in mind the PUNS list. Oftentimes you'll hear families say, well, I'm waiting for PUNS funding. So keep in mind the way the state sees it is PUNS. It's not an acronym. It used to be an acronym. It's not. All it is a waiting list. And so they see you on this waiting list. What you're waiting for is funding from the Medicaid home and community-based waiver. So, you know, each year the state pulls names. They pull children's names, which is often very surprising. Now, often those children are, you know, teenagers, but there is a children's waiver. They also pull adult names. I want to say around 1,500 very recently. We just did a poll this year within the last few weeks, I believe. So, but you won't get pulled from that if you're not on the list. And it's a significant wait. So, you know, if you get on at 2.5, you might not get pulled until 18, 20, 21. But if you're not on the list, you're not, you know, you don't have the choice. Right. The other thing that families don't often realize around that is that they have to be in a particular category to get pulled off that list. So there's seeking and then it'll come back to me, Shelley.
Anyway, okay.
So seeking essentially means if services were offered to me today, I would take them, right? If you're not in that category, then you're not going to get selected off the list, which is a surprise to families. The other thing that families need to know, is that they're going to have to qualify for Medicaid to get funding because the waiver funding comes through Medicaid. So that's really important. Understanding how SSI works and if an individual is going to apply for services there and if they'll qualify. Understanding vocational services and how they get vocational services, which is employment support through the Division of Rehab Services, how they access that. And what's really, really gets tricky is how do those services interweave with home and community-based waiver services and how can they be used at the same time? Because there are some services that can and some that can't. And even as I'm saying it and watching myself talk about it, I'm already like, oh, it's completely overwhelming. And so you can really see why families struggle. One piece of advice that I would give to families who are school-aged, you go ahead and get on the funds list, and you do that by contacting what it's called your Independent Service Coordination Agency, or your ISC. And that's something you can Google, Independent Service Coordination Agency. You'll let them know that you would like to be placed on the funds list, and the process is not difficult. It takes some paperwork. But the other thing you're going to want to do now is to really do a great job of keeping and organizing your school-based records, because those records are going to tie directly to whether or not you qualify for waiver supports, which is a lifetime of supports for someone with intellectual and developmental disabilities. It provides funding for support. It doesn't provide money to live on. It provides funding for supports. But if your records are not good and you cannot prove that you have an intellectual and developmental disability that meets their criteria, it makes getting approved much more difficult. So oftentimes we'll have families who say, I don't even know where my school records are. Or, you know, they've given them to me so many times, I just shredded them. Like I've had 50 copies. Don't do that. Keep your really good records. Make sure you keep all of your evaluations, both in school and out of school, private evaluations, and make sure you have access to those so that you can really tap into them when you're going to need them around SSI and Medicaid and waiver services.
So that's an excellent point that you brought up. And I've had parents ask me this question and I have given them an answer, but I'm not sure I've given them the right answer. How long should I keep all of my child's IEPs and their old IEPs and all the progress reports and all of that sort of stuff?
So generally, what we recommend is you keep them till at least age 30, which I know parents are like, wow, you know, I have to hold on to it that long. I would just start a notebook in early intervention and make sure that your early evaluation or any kind of testing that you do stays in there, your one copy of your IEP, and then any outside supports that you get in evaluations. You know, for example, if you do walk-up occupational therapy, maybe you don't get early intervention, but you're getting just therapy services, have that. And also any medical diagnostic documentation that can be super helpful.
And so you said have a copy of the IEP. So like if they've had from say age three on, you know, and so they've had a 3-year IEP, a 4-year, a 5-year-old, a kindergarten first, you know, and all the way up through their senior year, do they need to keep all of those, one copy of all of those, or is it just one copy of the last IEP that they had when they graduated or exited out?
That's a good question. What the system really is going to look for is, do you have an IEP from kind of early teenage years? So typically, you know, if you have an IEP from when an individual was 16, that can be a good fit. Part of that, you know, parents, if you have older students, you're used to them doing evaluations every 3 years. One of the things that the system looks at now, and there's a lot of pros and cons to this, so I'm not necessarily endorsing it. I'm just telling you this is what the system looks at, is IQ scoring. So if you have IQ scoring, which many families do, whether that happened at age 4 or it happened at age 17 or both, I would keep any IQ scoring you have. I wouldn't get rid of that at all. But a couple IEPs from the teenage years that document disability would be enough.
Okay. Perfect. Thank you. Yeah, because I do get that question frequently. And I kind of have said similar, you know, like anything that's super important, that's, you know, and definitely like the very last one for sure. But maybe, you know, a previous 3-year triennial evaluation paperwork. But I hadn't thought of it. I don't know if I've ever told anybody about the IQ part. And this, again, is stuff that as a teacher, I taught K through eight, so it wasn't really something that was necessary to be on my radar. And so I don't want to speak and say that high school teachers don't know about the organizations that are available. But at the same time, I have gone to, as an advocate now, many high school meetings, and it certainly doesn't seem that if the schools know about it, they're passing the information on to the parents.
We, you know, what we've sort of deduced from this, because, you know, we see this a lot, is that, honestly, I think the system is so complicated and the schools are so overtaxed and the teachers are so overtaxed that it's kind of one of those things where they may really want to know the system. They may want to learn it, but it's like, we cannot learn the system. But I do think it's critical, if the school system can't absorb that, which again, we totally understand, that families get referred appropriately to the agency so that they can then take those steps that they need to take to get familiar with what they need. And it's, you know, I'll be honest, we really, it kind of gives us a sick feeling in our gut when we get a referral for an individual who's 22. Because we feel like, oh my gosh, there's so many steps that still have to take place. The wait for services is much longer. So, you know, we want to get individuals engaged in community supports and self-advocacy long before that, so that they go out of transition ready to sort of hit the ground running. But we just don't see that a lot. And I think part of that is what you said. It's a disconnect between school and community services.
Right. And I mean, the school is the organization where the kids are spending the most of their time getting most of their information. Doctors, I don't know, like, I don't see a lot of doctors talking about your organization or what the services are. And it's one of those things, and this is an area that I have struggled with in my own business, is how do I get the word to the people who need to hear it? You know, so often I find people and I tell them what they do and they say, oh, I wished I would have known about you when I was going through that. And I'm like, well, how do I find the people that are going through it?
How do I get that to them so that they can access it? That's a $1 million question, Shelly, because we struggle with that too. We think, well, part of it is that we feel like in the school system, sometimes the team itself doesn't know what they don't know. So it's not even that they know to ask a question to say, well, what is a parent training and information center? They've never heard of it.
Right.
And so they don't even know to ask a question. Or what is a center for independent living? Like, that just, they don't know what it is. And we've tried to fill the gap. I mean, I feel like we have lucked out in terms of like the use of social media, because prior to social media, I can't even imagine trying to get some of this out. But we don't always reach the folks we want to reach, because not everybody's using social media. And some of the people that need the supports the most aren't looking at Instagram. You know, they don't have a Facebook account. And that is so difficult, because you really feel like you're missing some folks who really, really need that support and who could benefit from it, and they're not getting it. And so that's a challenge we ask ourselves all the time.
Yeah. And it's been, I was part of an early Head Start policy council, and we had the same issue. You know, how do people, and even if you put things in front of people, like if you were to put a mailer in everybody's mailbox, a lot of people look at the outside and go, oh, that's spam. And they throw it away, you know, or even if they see it, they may not need it at the moment that they see it, but then 6 months down the road, they need it, but it didn't stick in their brain.
Yes.
You know, and I think the statistic that I've read the most recently is you have to have exposure to something 7 times before your brain really notices it. And then it's another 7 or 14 times before you will remember it long enough to be able to act on it when you need it.
Yeah, that, you know, honestly, it makes sense. It's a discouraging statistic, but I think just based on, I think about how I navigate things and what I see for myself, you know, personally, and I think that's probably true. You know, the more I see something, the more engaged I'm going to become around it. And I also think, to be fair, and I say this as a mom who felt this way 100%, that when families get to the point where they feel like they're ready to start tackling some of this, and they're ready to dig into transition more deeply, maybe they're ready to look at community supports, whatever it is, and they go, okay, let's go. You know, they take that step. They call us. They call you. They call somebody. And then we start talking about it. And it starts to be like what I just said, where it's very overwhelming. It's confusing. Yeah. The systems don't talk to each other. And then they finally just go, never mind. Like, I can't, it's too much. I can't do it. I remember that feeling myself of like, I don't think I can do this. And so like breaking it down in a way that's meaningful to them. That's just like, hey, this month, just do this one thing. Just get on the puns list. Just do that.
Right.
That makes it much easier for families. And that's one of the reasons I like what we're able to do, because I feel like we can support families like that. We can work with them. You know, call us in July and let's just talk about what it's going to be like to transition from early intervention to school-based. We'll just talk about that and see how you're doing with that.
Right.
Call us back in October if you want to talk about, you know, what kind of modifications you might want to consider because your kiddo's having difficulty with the curriculum around math. They don't have to write everything off at one time. It's not a one and done kind of scenario. That I really appreciate about the way they funded our program. But that just gets much more complicated as students get older. And,
right.
You know, it goes well beyond the school system. And then, you know, we have less control over community supports and how that looks and how they all talk to each other.
Yeah. Yeah. I have said way too often lately that we have a lot of systems that were intended to be great, but are broken. And then they don't. And like you just said, they don't talk to each other or they don't talk well to each other.
Yes.
You know, and so, yeah, it is. And I've faced like just doing, I mean, like I kind of compare what you're talking about to doing taxes, you know, because that's something that everybody can associate with. Yeah. And if you try to do your own taxes and you try to read the tax laws, you know, that are about this thick and you try to understand them to make sure that you are getting all the things that you should be getting and you're paying all the things in the way that you should be paying them, it's very overwhelming. And that's the same thing with special education and special services and programs like yours. It's just like you said, you look at it and you're like, and you just kind of gloss over and, you know, it's like, I just don't have the brain power to process this right now.
Yes.
And I'm finding this even more so. And I like to throw this number out because it's something that when I heard it, I've just been dumbfounded and I still am, that currently in today's world, the average person processes 74, I believe it's four, oh, we'll just say over 70 gigabytes of information every single day. And that is equivalent to 16 movies.
Wow.
Every single day.
That is amazing.
Yes. And, you know, 500 years ago, that was as much as somebody did. And that was a very learned person in their entire lifetime.
Yep. Yes.
And so it's so easy for anybody to get overwhelmed and just go, I don't have the brain power.
Right. And then when you take that and you, on top of that, you add maybe a parent who's parenting a child with really significant medical complexities, really significant intellectual disabilities and requires high support. And then you think all the decisions they're making all day long. And then I'm going to come in and say, hey, have you applied for SSI? You know, so you can see how it happens. So I do think that I shouldn't be so flippant about it because it is a really, really significant concern. And I do think it's something, a challenge we can take on. I think we can prepare families much better than we do now if we can make that connection between school and community services much stronger. And if we make it more relatable for families, you know, more doable. Right. You know, there's never a group of families who I feel like need wins more than families of students with disabilities who are already exhausted by the system. Even when things are going well, the system is hard to navigate at school. And so it's sort of like, how can we set you up to have some wins here as you make some of these transitions? Yeah. And I think we can. I don't think it's impossible. And I've watched as families do it. So I get a sense of, you know, you will do it and you'll make it work. And you know this, you know, I'm sure so well. In my experience, families learn best from other families. You know, they want to hear another family who is 50 feet ahead of them say, you know, I know how terrible that application is, but the services we're getting are so helpful that it's worth taking the time. I'll come over and help you do it. And so sort of that family to family support, you know, as much as some of the other systems in Illinois are broken, that piece is really strong. Everybody on our, you know, our educational support coaches, myself, are all parents. We've all navigated the system. We have a sense of it. And I do think it helps to be able to connect to somebody who says, yeah, you know, I did that last week. Let's talk about it.
Oh, that's wonderful. I didn't realize that everyone there was a parent as well. So that's fantastic.
Yeah. Yeah. So we're very lucky that way. And I think we've learned a lot from each other. You know, the number of times I call Abby or Carrie and say, hey, I need help with this. Like, have you done this? And a lot of times as parents, they've done it, not just as professionals. So they can, you know, hold my hand through that. So I do love that parent to parent aspect in Illinois. And I think there's a lot of great parent to parent support. CU Able is really great. iPad Unite is really great. So sometimes if parents feel like they can't bite off connecting to an agency yet, just connecting to a parent group can be a really good first start.
Yeah. I know that when my internet was cutting out earlier, you were talking about the website and I wasn't able to pull it up. So I just want to pull it up really quickly just so people can see it. Cause I know you were talking about like navigating through it. So I have to be honest, the reason that I found out about you and your services was not actually because that you do what I do. I shouldn't say that. I think I did hear about you several years ago, sort of when I first started. But at that point, I was like, well, they're doing the same thing as I do. So why do I need to reach out to them?
Right, right.
The thing that brought me to you and got me so involved with you is becoming an educational surrogate parent.
Yes.
And so if you want to discuss that a little bit, or if you have a specific spot in the website that you want me to go to or to kind of show people how to get through the website itself, either direction right now.
I can do both. So what Sharon is talking about is called our Educational Surrogate Parent Program. That is a grant that we have through the Illinois State Board of Education. And it's a program I love. And I would be in big trouble with Abby if I didn't talk about it today, Shelley. So thank you. and so when you, I'm going to talk you through how to find events, that is going to link through the Educational Surrogate Parent Program. So basically, if you have an individual who, the simplest way for me to say it is, a student who doesn't have a parent or a guardian who can make educational decisions for them for various reasons. There's numerous reasons why that might be. An educational surrogate parent is trained to step in and provide that support for educational decision making for them, with them, in partnership with the student and with the IEP team. And so we're always in need of new educational surrogate parents. It's initially a 6-hour training, and then we ask you to sort of renew that training, not frequently. We have an ongoing group, so you can put questions in it as that comes up. And essentially, you're assigned students from the Illinois State Board of Education who are in need of, we call ESP, Educational Support Parent. And from there, you're going to connect with their school team or any case managers they might have, and you're going to work to advocate for them within the school system. And they're going to be your student, and you're going to follow them until they no longer need an ESP. Maybe they age out of the system. Maybe a parent or guardian is able to step back into that role for them. We need them across the state. We're always running low. It isn't, and Shelley, you could speak to this more than I could. You can decide how many students you take on. So you could take on one student. You could take on 10 students. You could take on students just for support in person, or you could just do support virtually and by phone. So you have a lot of control over how far away a student might live. ISBE would ask your support or your guidance on that, kind of what you're looking for. But we hold on to a lot of educational support parents for a very long time, which tells me that they enjoy the work they're doing with students and they find it meaningful. So if you have any questions about that, we run that training monthly. And on our website under events, you can register for that. And once you register that day that you log
in, is it event calendar?
Yes. I'm so sorry, Shelley. Okay. It's so tiny on my screen that I can't read the words.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Oh, no, it's okay. I can make it bigger, but I can't. Just like that. And so as you go down, one of these might say educational surrogate parent. You're going to be able to tell, Shelley, but I won't. Thank you. I see we have a typo there. That's going to drive me crazy.
I see it now that you said it, but I didn't see it before. Oh, boy. We'll hide that part.
Okay. Just skim right past that. Let's pretend that's not there. But then you can use this to register. And if you have questions about that, you can I'll put Abby's email. Abby heads up that program for us, and she would be happy to sort of do an FAQ with you and make sure that you feel comfortable. And honestly, even after you do the first training, if you do the training and at the end of the day, you're like, you know what, I'm not sure this is a good fit, or I want to think about it, that's okay.
And because of my background, I said I would take the max number of students. And I don't advise that.
That's fair.
Honestly, even for myself, knowing what I know, it's difficult to, and it might be my personality too, that I, want to know more about what's going on. And also because of my background, I sometimes think that schools would prefer I not be a particular student's educational surrogate parent, because I do know a lot of things more than what is able to be learned in the 6-hour training, because I felt it was a very good and very thorough training, there's a lot of things about special education law that are very, I don't want to say small, but they don't get talked a lot about in a very brief training like that.
Yes.
And, so to be able to stand up for students, I think that I have a little bit, I might rub some people the wrong way, because I do make them do their job. And I'm not saying other ESPs don't. I'm just saying that, I have had some other ESPs reach out to me and ask me, like, how did you know to do that? Or where did you find that? Or who taught you that? It's very rewarding. And at the same time, it's kind of sad, because I've had a few that they either aged out or they moved. Mm. And, you don't get to say goodbye. It's like, oh, you just get this notice from the ISB that says, oh, you've been removed as this person's surrogate parent. And I'm like, oh, okay.
I felt connected to them. And, what's happened?
Right. Yeah. So is there anything else? I grabbed her email off of here. I know you typed it in too. So you want to be an ESP is down here, and there's a little video that talks about it.
Because
I think with my internet connection, if I try to run that right now, it's going to mess it up. But there is a spot here at the bottom that you can go to. And what other services besides educational surrogate parents, and, are there any specific other things that you want me to touch on while I'm on the website?
Oh, I can sort of talk you through and tell you where it is on the website. We've got a couple things. So we offer a lot of webinars, more webinars than we ever think we're going to. We always laugh about, okay, no more webs. Let's slow down the webinars. And then we are like, well, what about this one? We need to offer this. So we've got a couple things coming up. We've got a series, a conflict resolution series specifically coming up in September, with some great speakers that are going to be joining us. It's a 4-week series. We have a virtual special education webinar coming up in late October, 2 full days. One's transition-based. The other is more basics of special education. But we also have some great speakers. We'll have Equip for Equality and Illinois Guardianship and Advocacy Commission doing some basics for families so that they can really jump in and sort of learn if you're new to special education, if you're running into barriers that you didn't anticipate, you're starting transition, it'll be a good place to start for them. We do, right now, tomorrow, we have a webinar on volunteering during transition and how that can be a great support for individuals who are looking for more employment in the community, but really maybe are struggling with that. How to do that, how to get started. The back to school webinar to help families get their feet wet right as they get going to get off to a good start. Mm-hmm. That's coming up as well. If you're an individual who loves data, and I know there are some.
That's me.
Daisy, and Daisy focuses on family engagement and the use of data to improve early childhood systems. So we have a new series on coming up related to data, family engagement, early childhood, and that's again called Daisy. You can find that on our website. We do a lot of one-to-one support, or what we call officially in parent training and information centers, individualized support. So if you, for example, want your IEP reviewed, you have a specific question around a service you're looking for, but maybe you're getting pushback from the school or the IEP team is not necessarily invested in a particular service. You know, we get a lot of questions about transition, extended school year, mental health and behavioral supports is a big one for us. What we call school refusal, how to navigate that, or resources for that. You know, every once in a while we get calls about residential supports and a student needing specialized therapeutic programming. We can make referrals for that to make sure. But any question related to your IEP, if you just want to go through your IEP, you know, line by line, and get ideas and get suggestions, both of our educational support coaches are set up to do that. So that's another way to access our services, and there's no charge for that. We have what's called Compass, and some of you might know that as the volunteer advocacy program. We're continuing to shift that as we go when we learn more about it. But what that is a 10-week program that's really designed to give you a good underpinning of the basics of special education, advocacy, and support. We're transitioning from a live to a self-paced online program that'll start in January. Oh. And really with the idea that then an individual can use that information as they wish, if they fully complete the program. So that's transitioning a little bit, but that'll start in January. And then we have a couple of video blogs. This is not my area of expertise at all, but Bridget Brown and Zoe Potter are both self-advocates who do video blogs on all kinds of topics. And that is on the website. You can go in and listen to those. They're great. They do such a good job. And if you're an educator who works with young adults with developmental or intellectual disabilities, those blogs can be super powerful because some of the topics that are discussed, some of the guidance that's given is super relatable. So again, that's mm-hmm. Bridget Brown, Zoe Potter. And let's see, did I cover? I tried to make notes so I wouldn't forget anything and get myself. Yeah, I covered it all.
Okay, good. And one of the webinars that you provided, and I guess it's provided to everybody, but again, because I'm an ESP, I get the newsletter, it was last year, I guess now, Stephen Byes, the policeman who is training. Yeah. So I don't know exactly what series or what like umbrella that falls under as far as like what that was that you offered, but that is amazing. And I've been trying to get Stephen down here to Southern Illinois where I am so that I can have his company train the police officers in my area about how to react with somebody with autism. And I've given him like anybody that I've heard across the country since I saw him. And he actually was a guest on hashtag No Limits. Because I was just so impressed and I thought, oh my gosh, that's another area that, you know, the advocacy, the perspective, the information needs to get out. And I very much enjoyed that one particular one, but there have been others too, but his was the one that stood out the most to me and one that is a service that all villages, towns, cities. My town is so small, it's called a village. I think that may have actually changed recently, but I think we have enough population now. Yeah, we have enough population now that we don't have to be a village, but, but yeah. So, you know, I mean, wherever you have a police force, you know, having that training, and then for you to bring that to the parents to learn that, hey, you know, call your local police department and talk to them about what kind of training they have for, you know, students with autism or intellectual disabilities or whatever. He really was.
We all were blown away by it. And the practical nature of what he shared, that you mm-hmm. could leave the parent and be like, hey, here's like four things I could do tomorrow to make things safer for my young adult.
Yeah.
We were blown away by him. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. He was amazing. Unfortunately, I don't get to make as many as you offer because like you said, you offer them all the time. But yes, I mean, they're all, I think, valuable, whether you're a teacher or for sure, if you're a parent. One thing I just want to clarify with you, because this has been mentioned many times throughout our conversation this afternoon. We've talked about intellectual delays or developmental delays, but you don't just work with you know, if somebody has an IEP for a student who has a specific learning disability or a traumatic brain injury, you're still going to help them. So I just want to make that clear.
Yes. Thank you. Thank you. Yes. Any student who has an IEP for any reason, we are more than happy to provide supports. And if it's outside of an area where we have a lot of expertise or experience, we will find that for you. So don't feel like you can't reach out to us if maybe you're just seeking one supportive service, you know, at school and you're having trouble getting that. That's absolutely fine. Reach out to us.
Yeah. And that's, again, that's any parent training and information center across the country. So we're getting close to the end. And so if you have some things that you're like, oh, I know you had your list of things, services that you all wanted, that you wanted to talk about that you offer. But was there anything else when I asked and you're like, oh, yeah, I want to go on there because I want to talk about, you know, did we miss anything?
I hope I didn't miss anything because, you know, I'll look back, Shelly, and be like, oh, she gave me this free book. I missed that. I will say we have a couple little things that we have going on. We've got a fundraiser coming up related to it's called Nuxle's Food Center, and they help us do a raffle. PTICs are funded to provide this minimum of service. So we really have to do fundraising on top of that to make sure that we can provide more robust services. We have a new bonfire.
Oh, wait a minute. I'm gonna pause you for a second. Yes. So you have the fundraiser, and I've been able to participate in it, and I am not near one of your centers. So how do people find that, and how do they participate in it, even if they're not in Illinois or near one of your centers?
Thank you. So you can donate directly on our website. If you just want, hey, Family Matters sounds great, and we'd like to give you a little donation, we would be thrilled, and you can do that on our website. You can also, if you, for example, wanted to participate in this raffle, I would follow us on Facebook because we share all of that information on Facebook, and you can just look up Family Matters Parent Training and Information Center, find us there. We just started a bonfire account, which allowed us to print sweatshirts and have some advocacy things and things like that for families to wear to their IEP meeting, positive energy at their IEP meeting. So that's there as well. And you know, typically we try to work with families on whatever they need, Shelly. So it's not uncommon for us to get a family who calls us and we think, okay, well, this really kind of is outside of our expertise. We will make sure you get to where you need to be, or maybe you just want something local. You know, maybe, for example, one of the struggles that we have, which surprises people, is really in terms of direct hands-on support, we have two educational support coaches, but we're covering 94 counties. And so because of that, yeah, you know, it's frustrating to families if we can't show up in person at an IEP meeting. We really want to go to IEP meetings in person. Like, we would love that. But the vast majority of the time we cannot because we don't have the funding to get to that IEP meeting that might be six counties away from us. So we often work with maybe making a referral to Shelly or making a referral to an advocate closer to you, or Zooming into IEP meetings, things like that. And that's a reason that we get a lot of calls for families. They want some help at their IEP meetings. They want some help with that communication piece. Our focus is on coaching families up so that they feel super confident when they go in that they have the tools they need to advocate for what they're looking for. But sometimes families need more than that, you know, they need more support than that. And so trying to be creative about how we get that support to them in a meaningful way.
Yeah. Yeah. So I did put the Facebook page up. So anybody who wants to find them on Facebook, it's facebook.com/FamilyMattersPTIC. We've said this a couple times, but I do want to spell it out again. Their website is F as in Frank, M as in Mary, P as in Paul, T as in Tyler, I as in Indigo, C as in cat.org. FMPTIC. For those listening on the podcast and not seeing this on the video, I just want to make sure, because these things are up on the screen. So if you're watching it on the video, you can see it. But if you are only listening to it in the podcast, I want to make sure that you know where to find Megan and the wonderful organization here in, I started to say downstate Illinois, but I mean, you're not, you're all over the state except right near and around Chicago. And so make sure that you reach out and support them. If you think this is an organization that does wonderful things and you want to help them to make sure that they can continue to provide the services to all the different people that they support. And you can also do that for me. They are assuming you're a 501c3, correct?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So if you donate to them, it is a nonprofit, so you can take it out on your taxes. I am not a nonprofit. If you But you can still donate to me, so as low as possible to the families and parents that I work with. So that's just going to my website, shellykino.com, and to the donate button. And so that's scrolling across the bottom as well. Yeah, Megan, I think we covered everything.
I hope so.
Yeah, Abby's going to be mad at both of us if we forget something.
We'll be in trouble. As long as I say, we'd love to have you as an educational surrogate parent, I'm going to be good to go. We would love to have you as a parent. And please reach out to us if you have questions about that, because that is one area in terms of volunteerism that we are always recruiting for and always in need of.
Yeah. And there can be a stipend involved. There doesn't have to be. If you truly want to do it as a donation, you absolutely can do that. It doesn't require a ton of your time. I mean, even myself with 10, that's 10 meetings I attend a year. And for me, I probably, again, am an overzealous ESP because I do know so much, and having been a teacher as well, kind of know some things that could be done that, teachers are like, oh no, we can't do that. And like, oh yeah, you can, 'cause I did it. Yeah. So I get more involved, and my meetings are probably longer than a typical ESP meeting would be. Like I said,
we love
you have 10.
Good. That's fantastic.
Even if you had 10 and you only went to 10 meetings a year, it's 10 hours out of a year to make sure that these kids are not being forgotten and not being sort of, oh, well, we're going to get this done quick because there's that parent that's not available to sign off for this stuff. So making sure that these kids are getting what they need. Okay. So, yeah, it's the only requirement is that you have a desire, right? I mean, there's no...
that you're willing to show up and build that relationship and, really look out for the educational needs of that individual. The vast majority of the time we see that people have really positive experiences. We hear really great things mm-hmm. about what families or what advocates are running into around that process, and they're learning a lot from it. So, please feel free to reach out if you have questions about that.
Yeah. Yeah. I highly recommend it. And I don't know if it's something that happens in every state, but if it is, no matter what state you live in, into it. If it's not, just the whole idea of that there's a parent training and information center somewhere in your state. And if you are a parent of a child who's going through special education, reach out to them, because even if things are going beautifully for you, there's still going to be something, I bet. Maybe it's just that connection with another family that you're going to be able to get through the family parent and training information center. So make sure you reach out. All right, Megan, last final words.
Well, really, I just want to say thank you. And if you're a parent listening, please take the time to go to the website and check it out and see if there are services that might be of use to you. Even if it's not one-to-one, you don't need to reach out to us. There are some printed resources that are outside of RPTIC that are really fantastic resources from the community that you might want to tap into. And that changes based on the age of your child and your needs. I know that shifts and evolves over time. But please feel free to reach out to us, ask questions. We really want to connect to families in the community and make sure they have the service and support they need.
Yeah. Awesome. All right. Make sure that you like and subscribe so you don't miss an episode of Hashtag No Limits. And we will see you next time. Sorry for the technical difficulties. Have a great week, everybody.
Thanks, Shelley.
Hey, parents and teachers. Are you tired of IEP meetings that feel like a battle? Let's put an end to the tension and create a collaborative, calm, and respectful environment together. Shelley Kino, your go-to IEP consultant, can transform your meetings into positive and productive experiences. With Shelley Kino, your child is her top priority, your voice is heard, and you become confident. Shelley Kino is making the world better for all, one IEP at a time. Visit www.shellykino.com for more information and set up your free 20-minute consultation today. That's shellykino.com, SHELLEYKENOW.